The annual Women's March is this Saturday at the state capitol in Phoenix. Now in its third year, the movement has been staying strong. However, accusations about the movement's lack of inclusivity has reached a head. This year, the national movement has faced allegations of being anti-Semitic and overwhelmingly white. The show's Lauren Gilger sat down with Mako Ward, an instructor in ASU's Women and Gender Studies program, and Imelda Ojeda, one of the organizers of the Phoenix Women's March, to discuss the disunity and criticisms the three-year-old movement is facing. Lauren started off by asking Ojeda how the Phoenix March responded to all of this and whether the local branch faced any of these accusations.
Yeah, so we have seen an uprise of concerns. We have been reached out by different organizers, groups here in Phoenix with concerns, you know, if like whether or not we align with those views and whether or not are we, you know, denouncing what has been happening. And of course we do, you know, even though we're not an official chapter of the national organization. So we have actually never had a one-on-one conversation with any of the organizers and the national. The only interaction that we have had with them is when we reach out to them to include our march on their calendar.
And you've actually taken it off, right?
Well, now that we took it off, we just didn't, this year, we didn't reach out to them at all to put it on their website.
And that's because of the controversies?
That's because of the controversies, yeah. Okay. And so we pride ourselves to have our own set of our values and things that we were focusing on, especially issues here in Arizona. And even though we share a common vision from where the National Women's March started from, we have molded our movement here in Phoenix or in Arizona to be tailored to the needs of the community here.
Mako, I want to turn to you and ask sort of a broader question about this. So this is something that I don't think anybody thought would continue after the first year. Then there was sort of momentum to do a Women's March again, and this is the third year. Is this something that's sort of inevitable? Like, why do things like this, movements like this, start to see fracturing at a certain point?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to keep in mind that this particular organization, right, the Women's March organization, and more specifically the New York-based Women's March organization, is one of many groups, collectives, platforms that are aligned with, I think, what we call more colloquially as the women's movement,
yeah.
Right? So, you know, thinking of it as a broad agenda of gender-based justice that is taking an intersectional approach to engaging the question of women's inequality, gender-based violence, gender-based discrimination. So the fate of the New York-based Women's March organization, in many ways, because they follow a decentralized organizational structure, right? Mm-hmm. They're coalition-based, they're broad-based, they're multi-issue. There's not a national organization that sets the agenda that then is filtered out to local organizations.
They
right?
were decentralized on purpose, though, right? Like,
right.
wasn't that sort of the idea from the beginning, that this was a grassroots, a people's movement?
Right, absolutely. And that model didn't begin with the Women's March, right? I think that the model of decentralized organizing is part of contemporary social justice movements. I mean, you see it with the movement for Black Lives. You see it with Black Lives Matter. So they are adopting a very popular model for broad-based, multi-issue, intersectional social movement organizing. Mm-hmm. So what happens to them, I don't think will diminish the momentum of this larger global women's rights movement.
Really? Okay. So, I mean, that's one of the major questions here, right? I guess, Imelda, from your point of view, does this feel like this hurts your message? Like, this is something that is a scar on the face of this broader movement for you?
Yeah, in some level, yes. When we started organizing the march this year, you know, we received a lot of questions. Some people that reached out to us saying, you know, I'm not joining this year because of this. So I feel like we had to do some maybe like damage control. We are trying our best to be as inclusive and as respectful as possible with all groups. And so that's something that we have been doing since day one. And I think year after year, we're learning.
Has that made it harder to get the message out there, to get people involved, because you're not involved in this broader, the national group at this point?
Not necessarily. I think it's actually something good. People see it as like, oh, great, then I'm coming, you know, because I hear that all this is happening over there and all these groups are not very inclusive and it's just more like a white woman movement. But when they see our group, we are a very, very diverse committee, and we have women from all walks of life, all different views, all different religious ethnic backgrounds. And so once they see that, they see who is organizing it and the message that we're sharing and our speakers that we have in this year, it changes their perspective. I'm like, okay, great, this is something that I can get on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mako, I want to ask you about sort of the challenges in doing that, in doing what she's describing, and making something truly grassroots and truly diverse and truly intersectional. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're speaking for women, quote unquote, that's a really huge group. That's more than half of the population, right? Mm-hmm. How do you kind of speak for everyone in something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the short answer is you don't speak for everyone, and you don't represent everyone's issues, right? And, you know, I think what we're witnessing in many ways, we're being invited, probably involuntarily, but we're being, as a public, invited into an internal sort of sustained organizational debate. Mm. How do you do deep level coalition building? How do you create a platform that is multi-issue? And how do you hold these ideological differences in the same space, right? And I think that on the one hand, the challenge is you have to keep building across groups. And at the same time, you have to continue to challenge and push back on political rhetoric that is discriminatory, that is hurtful, and that doesn't lead to the full sort of liberation of all people within the groups that you are fighting for. And so it's a challenge, but I think any organization that takes on an intersectional approach as part of their guiding principles, as part of their leadership structure, also is acknowledging the long history of the erasure of certain groups from the leadership of social movement organizations, namely women of color. So it's important to keep that broader historical context in mind, and that what we're witnessing here is just women who have made the commitment to keep having those critical dialogues, those courageous conversations within the space of their organization.
Okay, so then what about these sort of niche marches that come off of this? You have the Black Women's March, you have the Native American Women's March. Do these things add to that conversation, or do you wish that they could all be under one umbrella? Imelda?
I think it adds to the richness of the movement. I think we cannot, like me personally, I cannot put myself out there and see like, oh, I'm going to lead an Indigenous Women's March, or I'm going to lead, you know, the Black Women's March because I know what's best for them. I don't, because I don't have that experience. I think that a big part of it is not necessarily, I think we have to move away from, oh, giving a voice to the voiceless, but it's like passing the mic. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they have a voice. They just need a place to be able to share. So I think that's what we're doing with the contingent marches that we're doing. It's actually they're being led by our own organizers. So one of our organizers is an Indigenous woman, and she's leading the Indigenous Women March. Yeah. Another one is leading the Black Women March. I'm leading the Latinas. So we're bringing community leaders that we know from our experiences and someone that could speak for our community. We're bringing them along to the march, and we're combining all of them.
Mako, do you have anything to add there?
Well, I would just add that, you know, I think what's so exciting about living during this time of this new kind of wave of social movement organizing is that activists realize that their issues are all interconnected, right? So the movement for Black lives and the movement to secure equal access and freedoms for trans individuals and trans communities, we see that those political agendas are aligned and that they rely on each other for their own growth. It requires us to be multi-issue with our own individual commitments to activist movements. And I think the results of the historic midterm elections back in November is a great example of, one, the energy that it took to mobilize some of the largest voter turnout that we've seen for a midterm election historically, the gains for non-traditional candidates during that election. I think that that is a wonderful case to show how broad-based, multi-issue, multi-platform movements can be successful in the 21st century.
All right. That's Mako Fitz-Ward, an instructor in ASU's Women and Gender Studies program, and Imelda Ojeda, a social worker and one of the local organizers of the Phoenix Women's March. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.